Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. In recent months, a lot of Americans have been looking inward, examining how race has shaped the privileges they were born with and how our own biases, whether conscious or otherwise, affect the way we view other people. This was sparked in part by the killing of George Floyd, a black man who died with a white police officer kneeling on his neck during an arrest. Along with protests, frustration, and anger, this summer also prompted more open conversations about race. More workplaces and institutions turned to diversity training. But an executive order signed by President Trump last month seeks to limit the type of diversity training that can be offered, at least at federal agencies and other contractors that get government money. President Trump was asked about this last month at his debate with Joe Biden. Here's moderator Chris Wallace.
Why did you decide to do that, to end racial sensitivity training? And do you believe that there is systemic racism in this country, sir?
I ended it because it's racist. I ended it because a lot of people were complaining that they were asked to do things that were absolutely insane, that it was a radical revolution that was taking place in our military, in our schools, all over the place, and you know it, and so does everybody else.
Radical,
and he would know.
What is radical about racial sensitivity training, sir?
If you were a certain person, you had no status in life. It was sort of a reversal. And if you look at the people, we were paying people hundreds of thousands of dollars to teach very bad ideas and, frankly, very sick ideas. And really, they were teaching people to hate our country. And I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to allow that to happen. We have to go back to the core values of this country. They were teaching people that our country is a horrible place, it's a racist place, and they were teaching people to hate our country. And I'm not going to allow that to happen.
To talk about what this executive order might mean for diversity training here in Illinois, we're joined again by Professor Joseph Flynn. He's Associate Director for Academic Affairs at the Center for Black Studies and is an Associate Professor of Curriculum and Instruction at Northern Illinois University. He's also the author of White Fatigue, Rethinking Resistance for Social Justice. Joseph, welcome back to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me. It's nice to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you. I'd also like to welcome Professor Roberto Barrios. He's an anthropologist at Southern Illinois University, and he had planned to give a talk as part of Hispanic Heritage Month at John Logan Community College, but it was postponed, reportedly on account of President Trump's executive order. Professor Roberto Barrios, welcome to the 21st.
Hello, thank you.
And I'd also like to welcome Gioconda Guerra Perez, Executive Associate Vice Chancellor for Diversity at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Gioconda, welcome to you, and thank you for being here as well.
Good morning. Thank you, Brian, and thank you, colleagues, for being here today.
Listeners, we also want to invite you to join the conversation. The number is 800-222-9455. What do you think of the president's order? Have you been through diversity training recently in your workplace or your school? And what did you think of it? Join the conversation. Give us a call at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Or you can tweet us at 21st Show. Joseph, I want to begin with you. So the president's order says in part, quote, instructors and materials teaching that men and members of certain races, as well as our most venerable institutions, are inherently sexist and racist, are appearing in workplace diversity trainings across the country, even in components of the federal government and among federal contractors, end quote. Meanwhile, the administration is having agencies identify training programs on white privilege or critical race theory, presumably to get rid of them. So, Joseph, can we just start with sort of a basic definition here? What is critical race theory?
A critical race theory is a set of ideas that come out of analysis of law, and in which first and foremost, we recognize that racism is an indelible part of American society. Critical race theorists also use a number of important concepts such as counterstory, which is telling other people's story or people who are outside the norm, i.e. non-white folks. Other ideas like interest convergence, this notion that oftentimes policies are not passed in favor of the advancement of historically marginalized communities unless those interests do converge with the larger population. So it's not so much that critical race theory attempts to say that all white people are evil or anything like that, so much as we have to recognize that as much as we don't like it, racism has been baked into the American pie from the very beginning. And we can go back through law and look at it. It's very, very clear that white folks created themselves as their own category in the late 1600s. And from then on went for over 250 years, passing nothing but law, after policy that positioned themselves in a much stronger, privileged social position in the American hierarchy.
And Hiaconda, is critical race theory something that is a component of diversity training at the University of Illinois?
So, you know, as an institution in which we value and uphold the history and the research and literature that is out there, we definitely utilize all the theories to educate and to inform our students and our staff and colleagues about, as Joseph have mentioned, the history and the construction of the country. So I would say that we utilize all sorts of concepts and definitions in all the trainings that we provide. And unfortunately, the executive order, the definition and the description of what they use as divisive concepts leaves considerable amount of ambiguity and generates many gray areas that will likely lead to a variety of misinterpretations. So with all honesty, we have been looking at, and since it's really vague and creates a lot of uncertainty, you know, we continue providing our trainings with the components that they have.
And I want to come back in a little bit, maybe, so if we can put a pin in the idea, just the question of how that order will play out here in Illinois. And I guess, Joseph, I want to ask you, though, do you view critical race theory? Is that something that is an important component of diversity education, diversity training in the workplace?
It's essential. As a body of concepts, I think critical race theory helps us understand this question. You know, you hear this question out there, and this might be crude, but you hear this question of, what are they still complaining about, right? And so critical race theory helps us understand how a law or a Supreme Court decision like Brown versus Board of Education, although the spirit and the idea of the Brown decision was deeply important and a high watermark in American law and politics, nonetheless, there were repercussions to Brown versus Board that never get talked about, that can help us explain and understand the continued segregation that happens in America. One thing that we talk about is, in the wake of Brown versus Board, thousands of Black teachers lost their jobs. Black students were then taken out of Black schools that were promoting curricula that were empowering and important for those students, and a set of teachers that saw high expectations and really pushed them to be the best that they could be. Those students were then put into schools where they were marginalized, where they had a curriculum, where they were exposed to a curriculum that barely represented them at all. And when they were represented, they were represented largely as slaves. And, you know, this is what Black folks were in American history. Without talking really about the full scope of the contributions of not only African Americans, but also other historically marginalized groups. So I think it's really important that we recognize that, yeah, the country has done amazing things, and I would never say otherwise. However, along with that, there were some other things that happened as well that did not work so well. And if we aren't telling the truth about that, then how do we expect to really cure the ills of the nation? And sometimes that conversation is very challenging for some white folks.
Listeners, if you're just tuning in, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking about President Trump's recent executive order prohibiting certain types of workplace diversity training in the federal government and also in institutions that are federal contractors, and possibly even, and that's one of the things we're going to be talking about here, are institutions that get money from the federal government. We're speaking with Joseph Flynn, who is a professor at Northern Illinois University, works in the Center for Black Studies there, and is an associate professor of curriculum and instruction. Also, Gioconda Guerra-Perez, who's executive associate vice chancellor for diversity at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. And I want to bring in now Professor Roberto Barrios, an anthropologist at Southern Illinois University. You were scheduled to give a talk earlier this month at John Logan College, Community College in Southern Illinois, but the administration there postponed it, citing fears of losing funding because of President Trump's executive order. I should add, we reached out. The president of Logan was not able to join us, Ron House, but he did send a statement that said, "We reacted to an email advisory from the Illinois Community College Diversity Commission, which urged colleges to review diversity activities for compliance with the executive order. Noncompliance could result in the loss of federal monies. We paused our diversity events to determine our status with the executive order. We have resumed scheduling diversity events and activities." End quote. Roberto, can you talk about what was the talk you were planning on giving for Hispanic Heritage Month that was postponed?
Yes, I guess to put the talk in context, I was born in Guatemala, Central America, and I myself was born and raised in an ethnic group that calls itself Ladino, not Latino with a T, but Ladino with a D. And Ladino is a term that is often used to refer to people whose genealogies include both indigenous people, but also people of Europe. And we also have Afro-diasporic people in the nation state of Guatemala, as well as a variety of people from around the world. But Ladinos are conceptualized as people with very diverse genealogies who nevertheless have a cultural affiliation for North American and European culture and modernity. Ladinos have ruled the country, especially following independence and throughout the 19th century, and have been guilty of tremendously marginalizing indigenous populations to the point that led to an armed civil conflict that was very bloody, that resulted in the massacring of over 120,000 people, predominantly indigenous, and the destruction of over 400 indigenous villages during the 1980s, especially under the direction of a president who asserted political power, a military dictator called Efrain Rios Montt, whose daughter, by the way, married a Republican congressman from Illinois. And
Jerry
who was
Weller, yes, I remember that.
Yes, and clandestinely funded by the United States federal government or State Department. Now, what I wanted to talk about was how I was raised with the equivalent of what we call white male privilege, except I was raised with what we would call Ladino privilege. I was raised to think that women owed me something, that indigenous people owed me their labor, and that there was this order of the world that was natural and righteous. And it wasn't until my family migrated to the United States precisely because of the conflict engendered by 500 years of colonization and marginalization of indigenous people that my family moved to the suburbs of New Orleans. As a matter of fact, the specific parish that elected David Duke, the former Grand Wizard of the KKK, who endorsed President Trump, whose endorsement President Trump refused to deny. Also the man who showed up in Charlottesville and said, "We are here to fulfill the promises of President Trump," in a rally that ended in the death of one woman who was protesting white supremacists. So the idea behind my talk was to show how it was my experience of being seen as a second-class citizen in the context of a very racist part of the United States, which are the suburbs of New Orleans, that was a very formative moment for me when I began to reflect on why is it that when I benefited from all these structures of gender, class, and race, I could not see them. I thought they were a natural ordering of the world. But when I was subjected to them, it wasn't very nice. But as a matter of fact, it led me to begin to realize and to begin to be capable of seeing things that I previously could not see. Again, all of these structures of culture and power that are actually historical in their origin and are by no means biological or natural. And what I wanted to reflect on in this talk is that when we talk about cultural pride, you know, pride is a very dangerous word. For example, recently we saw our president make a call out to a white supremacist group during a presidential debate called the Proud Boys. And one of the things that I want to do in Hispanic Heritage Month is to have people who self-identify as Latino to understand that while we at times may be subject to discrimination, we have a lot of things to take care of in our own communities, right? Within the Latino community, we have Afro-diasporic populations that are themselves marginalized in Latin American countries. So if you go to Mexico, there are Afro-descendants who think that there are serious problems with racism in Mexico. I also have friends from Mexico who identify as mestizo who argue that there is no racism in Mexico. Throughout the Caribbean and throughout the experience of Latino communities, the African diaspora has been a cultural part. It is also a part of many of our genetic ancestries. At the same time, the discrimination towards indigenous people is something that we need to critically reflect on. So what I wanted to advocate for in my talk was not a claim that white people are inherently racist or evil, and to recognize the diversity of the United States, but also to call attention and to make a call for what I would call a critical valuation of our heritage. And critical valuation is very different from pride. Pride can blind. Pride, if you're a Christian, is a deadly sin. Mm. Critical valuation means that you can take stock in your heritage, but also recognize that all human communities have the same potential for tremendous beauty, equity, advancement, or for tremendous violence amongst ourselves. And that it's our obligation, as we value ourselves, to reflect on those things.
Yeah. And we need to take a break in about a minute here. But Hiaconda, before we do, the Southern Illinoisan, a paper in Carbondale, reports that the Illinois Community College Diversity Commission, which is part of the Illinois Council of Community College Administrators, as I mentioned, they sent this letter to their members noting that community colleges, federal grant recipients, are likely affected by the president's executive order. Has the University of Illinois had to reexamine or reevaluate its diversity training?
So, Brian, I will say it was premature to conclude that we have to evaluate our trainings. I would say that based on our past experiences and collaboration with colleagues and units across our campus, we are confident that diversity training at the university does not stereotype or scapegoat individual, as Roberto mentioned earlier. You know, as an institution, we are committed to ensuring the importance that this work continues without disruption, and to supporting the dedicated faculty and staff who help us create a more just and equitable campus community. So,
okay, and we're going to continue I'm sorry to interrupt you. We do need to take a quick break here. We will continue this conversation after a break. You're listening to The 21st. Stay with us. Welcome back to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about President Trump's recent order on diversity training in the federal government. He is prohibiting certain kinds of training, particularly those that focus, it seems, on, although his executive order does not use the phrase critical race theory, that seems to be one of the things he's targeting. And we're talking about how that order is playing out in Illinois and whether it could have a chilling effect. We're joined by Joseph Flynn, Associate Director for Academic Affairs at the Center for Black Studies and Associate Professor of Curriculum and Instruction at Northern Illinois University. Professor Roberto Barrios is a Professor of Anthropology at Southern Illinois University. He had been, as we heard before the break, planning to give a talk as part of Hispanic Heritage Month at John Logan Community College, but it was postponed on account of President Trump's executive order. And Hiaconda Guerra Perez is Executive Associate Vice Chancellor for Diversity at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Joseph, I want to ask you, after George Floyd was killed, it seems that there was a renewed interest in diversity training and in individuals, a lot of people questioning their biases, their privileges, a lot of books flying off the bookshelves that people were discovering, some of them several years old. Workplaces have responded with diversity training. Can you talk about the evolution of diversity training over the years or even in recent months? Is this something that has changed over time?
Yeah, it has. Excuse me, I'm sorry. It has changed over time. I think we can think about it in terms of a shift, right? Initial diversity training that was starting in the 1980s, the 1990s, was focused more, less on you as an individual and more on them as others. You know, especially in education, a lot of the diversity training was around, how do you engage Black kids? How do you engage bilingual Latino kids. And typically when it was around Latinos, it was more about bilingualism than other issues that Latino students were facing in schools. How to challenge the model minority myth when it came to talking about Asians, Asian Americans. And so, but as we get further into the 90s and then definitely into the 2000s, we began to start thinking in terms of, well, let's shift this focus a little bit from the so-called others to white folks specifically, so that white folks also had an understanding of their historical background and how they're positioned within society as a larger group. And perhaps through the examination of white folks as a larger group in their history, white folks as individuals can then also take those lessons and begin to think about themselves as members of society and how they're positioned and recognize what their privileges are. I mean, sorry to bring up the dreaded P word. I know a lot of people hate that term, but many of us just, you know, kind of use the shorthand that if there's a system of oppression in place, all privilege is the benefit of that oppression. So oftentimes in sessions when white folks resist the idea of being labeled with privilege, their arguments aren't really about their race or their racial privilege, it's about their the lack of economic privilege. And so we have to help them tease those two ideas out so that they're not conflating them and assuming that they're all the same thing. So it's not so much that we're trying to teach white Americans to hate themselves or teach white Americans that the United States is just this irredeemably racist place or classist or sexist place, but that we do have this history that does need to be resolved because we keep returning to a lot of the same problems over and over and over again, right? And so if we don't understand how race is a product of the history of the United States and how racist structures have been built and maintained over time in the United States, then we don't really understand, for example, what it means when someone says Black Lives Matter, right? If you don't understand that history, for example, the history of the relationship between law enforcement and the African-American community, which has always been a contentious relationship, it's that much more difficult to understand why someone would say Black Lives Matter in the wake of the shooting of another unarmed Black kid. So if we don't understand how we're positioned within this larger story of America, then we can't do the really heavy work that it will take to rethink our institutions, rethink our practices, and redesign them so that they are much more, you know, fair, equitable, and dare I say, just.
Interesting. Yeah. And I, you know, you talk about privileges and the resistance that sometimes come when white people are confronted with that. Of all people, it was the late night comedian Jimmy Kimmel, I thought, talking about his own privilege, who said, you know, being white privilege doesn't mean that your life hasn't been hard. It just means that your skin color is not one of the things that might have made it a little harder.
Precisely.
Yeah. Hilconda, can you talk about at the University of Illinois? I understand there's a variety of different types of diversity training about, you know, maybe what a certain department might want to work on or a workplace needs to address in an individual department. Can you talk about some of the overall goals, though, that the University of Illinois undertakes with this sort of education and training for its personnel?
Yeah, so diversity and inclusion training is designed to build deeper understanding of past and recent events that will allow us, faculty and staff and students, to reflect, and that allows us to promote equity, you know, among all participants. And I think that the core of some of these trainings that we deliver here on campus, and the ones that are more effective, is when we have conversations and reflections and the participants engage in. So through our office, the Office of the Vice Chancellor for Diversity, Equity and Inclusion here at Illinois, we deliver all sorts of trainings, workshops, talks, seminars. And they are all different because the needs or the learning outcomes that each one of them has is different. So sometimes, as Joseph was saying, there are some trainings that are related to compliance. There are some trainings that are related to campus climate. There are trainings that are related to creating inclusive classroom. There are trainings that are related to understand different world perspective or cultural perspective. There are all sorts of trainings that we deliver. So one of our goals is that we want to provide an opportunity to all the participants to share their personal experience, to reflect on the assumptions that we have, the history that we have heard. And sometimes they have to be rethought. And it will allow us to understand better different perspectives, different experiences from different communities, different groups that have been oppressed historically in the context of the United States. And sometimes here at Illinois, we have students and scholars who are coming from all over the world. We also have to understand their perspectives, their histories, and their cultures to make this diversity training more stronger. So we value the trainings that we deliver. And we believe that we do it in a way that foster a respectful, tolerant, and inclusive campus to create a better community for everybody who is here on our campus.
If you're just tuning in, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. That was Gioconda Guerra-Perez, who is Executive Associate Vice Chancellor for Diversity at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. We're also speaking with Joseph Flynn, who is with the Center for Black Studies and an Associate Professor at Northern Illinois University, and Roberto Barrios, who's a Professor of Anthropology at Southern Illinois University. Roberto, I want to ask you, and I should say, listeners, still time if you want to join our conversation at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. But Roberto, in his executive order, President Trump said that these ideas around critical race theory are, quote, fashionable in the academy, unquote, but that they have no place in programs that are supported by federal money. And I wonder, as an academic, what your response would be to that?
Oh, I think it's a very cynical order on the part of President Trump. You know, one of the things that I wanted to emphasize here is that although there is such a thing as structural racism, and certainly, as Joseph has very well pointed out, from our law to the very operations of our universities, they are set up at times to discriminate and to make very hostile environments to which people who have been historically marginalized, like Native Americans, African Americans, Latinos. You know, I think that the majority of Americans are don't want to be racist. I think the majority of Americans that I have met over the course of my life, white, European ancestry, everyone, nobody wants to be a bigot. Nobody wants to be racist. We have a large, small minority of bigots who are very dangerous, very problematic, and who, quite frankly, pose a threat of treason to our country, because America has been a multicultural nation from its foundation. And the role of political leaders is to unite us and to make us work together, because that is the heart of resilience. And any political leader that seeks to divide us along lines of race, gender, class, sexuality for the sake of their own personal advancement is, I think, guilty of the act of treason against the American people. So the thing that I have found out in my own life experience as an academic and as a person, as a citizen of the United States, is that most Americans do not want to do these things. But they are grossly uneducated and ill-prepared. As Joseph pointed out, the transition that we saw in curricula has really not done justice to the American people and trained them in the very history of race relations, of class relations, and of gender in our country. Look at Mr. Dylann Roof. There is no reason Mr. Dylann Roof should be in death row. The reason he's in death row is because we as a society failed to provide him with a critical education of race history in America, to the point that he had to resort to the websites of white supremacists that taught him flat out lies that are in no ways scientific or well-founded, that gave him the motivation to go and kill 9 beautiful people in a church. White supremacy, racism, not only harms people of color, it also harms the perpetrators. It destroys their lives. Mr. Roof's life has also been destroyed. And I think most Americans know this. And most Americans do not want to do these things. They're just woefully unprepared to do the critical thinking that is necessary to be an ethical citizen in our society. Therefore, it is our obligation as institutions of higher education to help shape the society that we live to a society that's more accepting and more resilient.
Interesting.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
Go ahead, Joseph.
Add on to what Roberto's saying. in the popular conversation that we have about racism, we're all often taught about our individual behaviors. To be a racist is to be a bad person. It's an ethical failing in one's life, as opposed to a byproduct of systems and institutions, policies and processes that have been well established in the United States for decades, let alone centuries. So when you're watching TV, for example, what you're really looking for, which is one of the major ways we learn about things, right? We learn through television. You know, it's like, oh, well, there's a group of interracial friends there, so they must be okay. And, you know, these ideas like don't choose your friends like you choose your socks and stuff like that. That's all about your own personal behavior. But those lessons don't expand that lens to look at personal behaviors within a larger context, whether that be a larger spatial context, a larger historical context, a larger conceptual context. And so a lot of diversity trainings are designed to help folks understand the more systemic and institutional aspects of racism, and not just, oh, well, as long as you, you know, say hi to your Black colleague at work, then you're not racist. And it doesn't work like that. And so again, when we have these questions of, well, why are they protesting so much? Well, there are parts of the story that you haven't been exposed to. And just because you haven't been exposed to doesn't mean it's not true and doesn't mean it's not operating. And so we have to help folks understand where these roots come from. And a part of that story is grappling with the early construction of the early social construction of the country, and looking at things like racism, looking at things like, why did we pass anti-miscegenation laws? Why did we close Reconstruction when it was working? Why did we allow entire towns to be decimated in the early 1900s through white race riots? Why did these things happen? And we understand, you know, they always say, if you don't know your past, you don't know your future. And so a lot of diversity training is just really designed to help people understand how these events have played out, the impact that these events have had, mm-hmm. and then perhaps ways that we as individuals can help ourselves see through these ideas and these past practices to something new and more egalitarian and, dare I say, beloved to the rest of the society.
Joseph Flynn is a associate director for academic affairs at the Center for Black Studies and a professor at Northern Illinois University. We've also been speaking with Gioconda Guerra Perez, who is executive associate vice chancellor for diversity at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and Roberto Berrios, professor of anthropology at Southern Illinois University. Thank you all so much for being with us today on the 21st. That is all the time we have. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. We'll be back again tomorrow. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening.